Today's podcast is brought to you by Cheryl Lynch of Cheryl Lynch Quilts. Cheryl started quilting in 1992 and is an award-winning quilter and published quilt designer. She enjoys devising solutions for creative projects. Her most recent innovation has been mini mosaic quilts that are suitable for young and old, as well as novice and experienced quilters. Cheryl sells her kits and projects in her Etsy shop at Cheryl Lynch Quilts on Etsy. She is offering Walshy Naps listeners a discount of 20% by using the coupon code Walshy Naps. Thank you so much, Cheryl Lynch of Cheryl Lynch Quilts. And now, here's the show. Welcome to episode 152 of the Walshy Naps podcast. I'm Abby Glassenberg. Today, we're talking about building a business in the sewing industry with my guest, Patty Palmer. Patty is the driving force behind the Palmer Pletch Publishing Company, which has published dozens of sewing books and how-to DVDs, and she's also the creator of 8 Palmer Pletch Sewing Notions products, including Perfect Fuse interfacings. Patty has been designing for the McCall Pattern Company since 1980 and Vogue prior to that. She has written the guide sheets for over 250 patterns that include fit and sewing tips. Palmer Pletch workshops are offered in several cities around the country. And Patty's also excited that her daughter, Melissa Watson, is following in her footsteps, joining a number of talented young women new to the fashion sewing industry. So, Patty Palmer, welcome.
Well, thank you, Abby. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you. And so we're going to start way back in the beginning and hear a little bit about your background. And I wondered if you would tell us where you grew up.
Oh, that would take the entire rest of the show.
Did you move around a lot?
We did. I went to 12 different schools in 12 years. But mostly in Oregon. My dad was a teacher and a coach and then went into logging and we moved to Montana. I just went to my high school reunion in Missoula, Montana, and that was my third high school. But Hood River Valley, Oregon was one major location, and the Oregon coast another, and then Montana, the third one.
Oh, wow.
But I loved it. I mean, I amazingly adapted really well. I just sort of thought, well, I have no choice. We're moving. We're going to a new school.
Yeah. So did you have siblings?
Uh-huh. 2 younger brothers.
Okay. And so
one of them works for me now and has for about 30 years.
Oh, wow. What does he do for you?
Well, he used to run an import business. We imported with my late husband. We imported dinnerware from Italy. And then when we closed that operation, he just moved over to Palmer Pletch, and he runs the warehouse and operations and all the emails that get sent out to our customers about new things that are happening. And when people sign up for workshops or whatever, they go through him. And his name is George. He's very friendly. And all the ladies, when they come to the workshops, they'd like to have him come over and see him. And he loves it.
Oh, wow. That's great. Oh, I didn't realize that he worked with you. So your dad was a teacher and a coach and then got into logging. That's really interesting. And what did your mom do? Was she a homemaker or did she work as well?
She was a homemaker because that was more or less what was allowed at that time.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I figured as much. Okay.
That's a good thing. I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so did she know how to sew? Did she teach you how to sew?
Well, she sewed for me when I was little. And for some reason, when I was about 9 or 10 and I started having an interest in sewing, probably through 4-H, she stopped sewing. And I don't know if that's, you know, sometimes people think, well, I don't want to be competitive with my child or whatever. Or maybe it was because we only had one sewing machine. I don't have a clue. And I never asked her. And she died when she was 59. So I never thought about those questions at the time.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, you got into 4-H and you did learn to sew some there, is that right?
Oh, of course, yeah. It was
Okay.
a great place.
Yeah,
To be.
I wasn't involved in 4-H. That's not, I grew up in a suburban environment, and so 4-H was not something that my friends and I did. So what exactly did they, did they teach you?
Well, I can speak from experience of being a leader for a 4-H club that had a cooking and a sewing unit. And I co-did that with another woman who was a home economist from Oregon State, which is where I went to school. And we had 13 gals from 7 to 9, and we alternated having a sewing session and a cooking session. And we always had projects that they would do, and we'd go to fabric stores and talk about shopping for fabric. And then they would enter a garment in, or a recipe or whatever, in a county fair. And if they won county fair, they went to state fair. And Melissa, of course, was probably the main reason that I decided to do this, because I thought it was a good experience for me, and I think it would be for her. And she actually entered one of her paintings in the fair, and she won grand champion at the state fair, which is something that people want to win their entire lives. And she was like 9. So,
wow. Yeah, she's very artistically talented. Okay, so
but
you.
She didn't do well though on her sewing project.
Oh.
She made a perfect, perfect dress with a lace up front. And she just got tired, and she just put the two ends of the tubing, lapped them, and sewed across them, and then laced up her dress. And they couldn't really give her anything but a white ribbon for having that little raw edge sticking out.
Oh my goodness, that's funny.
It was. I didn't intervene.
Right. No, right. Good for you for not intervening. So you were not only involved in 4-H as a kid, but you were also involved as a mom, it sounds like, once you had a daughter.
Yeah. And it's such a, I mean, if anybody lives near where they have county fairs, and then they probably have 4-H leaders that, take on kids. So it's a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then in high school, you were also the state debate champion for Montana.
Yes. And I just had dinner with my partner in Missoula when I went there for our reunion last week.
Wow.
And she went on to be an attorney. But I went on to be a public speaker and a writer, so I guess the debate served us both well.
Yeah, right, exactly. You didn't go on to be an attorney, but you used a lot of those skills in the business that you did build.
Yeah, I think it's the reason I do what I do, actually.
Really?
We had to do, you had to prove a topic that the question that was explored nationally, like federal aid to education was one example, and you had to be able to prove it was a good idea and prove it was a bad idea. So you really had to get your thoughts together and get your proof together. So we did a lot of research, and really researching and hypothesizing is just what I do in writing sewing books or editing sewing books as well. And then we had to speak. So, those are the tools I think that made me more successful in the career that I chose.
Yeah, exactly. So when you were thinking about your career, I can't imagine that, well, maybe you imagined this particular career, but maybe not. What did you think you wanted to go on to do when you went off to college?
Well, just like most young people, I had no clue. And I had absolutely no clue that sewing, I used to enter contests and play my accordion, and I was rotten at it. I never thought you could enter clothing that you'd made until somebody won Miss America for being a sewer. But I was a social, social, I can't think of the name of it. That's what I started with in college anyway, social work, I guess. And then I took a textiles class and a food science class and nutrition class, and I was so fascinated with both that I moved over to home ec and finished Oregon State with a clothing textile merchandising and design major in home economics. And that was setting me up for a career, probably to be a teacher, but I didn't want to be a middle school or a high school teacher, so I sort of didn't go that direction, and my dean was not happy with me about that. But anyway, I graduated in 1968, and that was when the sewing industry was growing by leaps and bounds, probably because of companies like Stretch and Sew making
Right.
sewing easy and teaching so many people. So when I got out of college, I went to Meyer and Frank first, and got on their executive training program to be a buyer, but I didn't really.
And what was, I don't know what Meyer and Frank was. What
oh, I'm
was
sorry.
that?
Yeah, you know how there used to be department stores everywhere in the country, like they were homegrown, and then May Company and Macy's and all those stores bought those department stores.
Right.
But Meyer and Frank was still Meyer and Frank. I think it had just been bought by May Company. And I was a buyer trainee and eventually became a buyer, but I left in the meantime for a while. I went to work for Armo Interfacing Company as an educator in the Northwest. And eventually after that, when those jobs started disappearing, I went back to the company and created a corporate home economist position. And I ran a sewing school in 5 stores and bought Sewing Notions and brought in events for the store. But my Armo job is where I met Susan Pletch, and she lived in California, and we were asked to develop programming for all of the other 30 representatives around the country. And we had so much fun working together that eventually we started a business together.
Okay, so just backing up a little bit. So you worked at this department store as a sort of a trainee buyer in the sewing department. And that involved sort of choosing notions and fabrics that would be carried at the store and also educating consumers or sort of teaching classes at the store. Is that correct?
That's what I did when I came back to the store.
Okay.
But my first time I was hired right out of college, I was one of, I think, 10 out of 600 applicants for a job as a buyer trainee. But they could put you anywhere they wanted to. And I was in ready-to-wear and I was in lingerie. And
oh, I see. So actually just buying clothing.
Learning
to buy clothing.
And I could have been in housewares in China or
right.
something.
Right. Okay, got it. And then you took this other job at Armo Interfacing. And what did they make? What was that?
Well, they were the largest, probably one of the largest, other than Pellon, one of the largest interfacing
okay.
manufacturers in the world. And they sold to all the American ready-to-wear companies. And they just decided to go into home sewing. And they had linings and underlinings and interfacings. They developed the first fusible interfacing, so I was a part of that whole movement. We used to call them bacons because they weren't really very good. And eventually they came out with weft interfacings, which were wonderful, but they eventually went bankrupt because all the clothing construction went abroad.
Okay, right. But they did develop the first interfacing because before what, like 1968 or something, there was no fusible interfacing. Is that right?
I don't think there was. I don't know. Pellon might have, you know, with non-wovens, it's pretty easy to calendar a fusing agent to a product. They may have, or they may have come out with it at the same time. So I really can't answer that. But I pretty well thought they were the first ones to do fusibles.
Okay. And, so it's hard to, I mean, it's hard to imagine sewing without a fusible interfacing, but yeah, okay. So, you know, right around that time period, let's say, that's when this product was developed and you were, you know, working in the industry at the time that this product came about. And so did you travel around and teach people how to use it?
Yeah, that was our job. It was really to show lots of different clothes that were made. I remember one of the first projects I had to make was a wool coat, and I had to make it half of it like a summer coat and half of it as a winter coat. So when you looked inside, you saw lamb's wool underlining in the winter side, and you saw lighter weight products in the summer side. And in those days, we had hair canvas and we did custom tailoring. So one side was custom tailored with hair canvas, and the other side, the summery side, was using the early fusibles. But it was an amazing experience. And I will say that there were There were probably 150 women traveling for the pattern companies, the notions companies, and the interfacing companies at that time. And the Armo girls, as we call ourselves, we probably made the least amount of money, but we had the best time because we could sew anything. We weren't just teaching how to put a zipper in. We could teach any kind of sewing techniques because we're really talking about building a garment from the inside out.
Wow. Yeah. So this must have been really good as far as like your training as a seamstress and as a tailor.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did couture techniques. We did bias lamb's wool and hems. And I mean, we just could do anything we wanted to. That's what was so much fun about it. And then teach it and include it in a program. Of course, when you teach and you talk about their products because you love them, it's really easy to train salespeople or teach consumers. And we'd even go into high schools. But that was about the time. It was the late 60s, and you know about the late 60s.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rebellion, and the high school kids, they really didn't want to hear about fine sewing anymore.
Yeah.
So we sort of redirected, but I did a lot, went into a lot of high school home ec classes and talked. And I think, I'm kidding in a way, but I could see the change coming, I might say it that way.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, you graduated in 19, you said 1968. So yeah, I mean, that was a pretty crazy time in this country.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Okay. So, I mean, but it does sound like you got a lot of like on the job training through these two different companies that you worked for over the course of those years. And that was like a total of 15 years or so that you spent between these two different companies. Is that about right?
1968 to 1976, I think.
Right. So, and you know, basically learning both sewing techniques and also teaching and buying, like a whole lot of different sort of things that would come into play later. And as you said, you met your business partner, Susan Pletch. And so tell us a little bit about meeting her and about your relationship with her.
Oh, Well, we met, you know, at Armo, and then we were put together to develop programs. So we worked closely together at her. I usually went to her place because she was married, and I could just be gone longer. And so we'd go to San Jose, and we'd start developing. I think one of our first things was interfacing knits, because knits were all of a sudden really popular. And we wanted to underline them and all those things because that's what we did. It was sort of funny when I look back at it now. But we just had so much fun. And her husband would say, "We're going out to dinner and I don't want you two to talk sewing." Well, we didn't really know what else to talk about. And so we'd sit there just totally silent. And all of a sudden, we just burst out something about sewing. And then not long after that, all of the companies no longer had educational representatives because it was too expensive. And the industry was changing a lot. And so Susan was actually the last educator for the sewing industry in the United States. And
wow.
That was for Talon Zipper Company. And she, her last major job was going to every JCPenney store in the country and giving a talk to salespeople and consumers about interfacing or about zippers.
Wow.
And tell them.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that truly, this was in the mid to late 70s, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, pretty much early before the mid 70s. And
okay.
I started back at Meyer and Frank in, I think, 1971. So I was just 3 years in the traveling, you know, kind of part of the sewing industry. And that's when I went back through and finished the training program to be a buyer. And then talked to them. Well, they started a sewing school as well. And then I talked them into making me a corporate home economist, and I could do cooking things and bring in people to do that as well. So, and just then becoming a buyer, but I got to go to New York twice a year, every year. And, loved New York City. It was fun. But I met I went with a fabric buyer, and he was a big buyer and treated royally. And so I got treated royally right along with him. It was really fun.
I bet. Yeah. Okay. So how did you and Susan get this idea that maybe you should start a company together and strike out on your own? That seems like a really big step.
Well, she came to a show I put on, a big consumer show at Meyer and Frank, and she was sent there by Talon, but she also knew she wasn't going to have a job pretty soon. And she said to me, "Patty, you know, you wrote a pant book, and now you're the one that knows how to sew Ultra Suede better than anybody else," because I was probably the first person in the United States to get a free cut of Ultra Suede when it was brand new, when they were selling it to department stores. And I had done a lot of classes on it and teaching on it. And I said, "Susie, I don't have time to write a book now. I'm traveling on every vacation or day off to other May Company stores and doing pant seminars," because I had written the pant book. And she said, "Well, tell me everything you know and I'll write it." So I did. And she went back to San Jose and she wrote an all word, no art or illustration, rough draft, and then came up to Portland and stayed at my little apartment. And we pumped out the book. Boy, it was different then. We typed everything on a typewriter and pasted it up, and I drew rough art, and she made it final art, and we pasted that up, and we used little Zip-a-tone things to create shading and for the printer. But that said, every page was probably redone 20 times. And then the book comes out, and we proofed it very thoroughly. The first sentence in the book said, "Ultra Suede is an amaxing new fabric."
Oh my gosh, like, no.
So much for proofing. But anyway, there's no such thing as a perfect book, let me tell you that.
I want to take a minute now to talk to Cheryl Lynch of Cheryl Lynch Quilts.
My name is Cheryl Lynch, and my business is Cheryl Lynch Quilts.
And what inspired you to come up with this idea of the fabric mini mosaic quilts?
Well, a lot of my quilts are inspired by my trips, and we were on a trip to Israel. And we went to this amazing temple that was covered floor to ceiling with mosaics. And I just love them, but I didn't want to start a hobby with stones and stuff like that. So my goal was to figure out how to do it out of fabric.
Oh, cool. And so what is the process behind making the mini mosaic quilts?
So I start with batik fabrics, and I use batiks because they're tightly woven and it doesn't matter what side you use. And we all have lots of scraps of them if you're a quilter. So I cut them up into little squares and I follow a pattern and I place the little squares on sticky stabilizer using tweezers and a pair of scissors, not very fancy. And it's nice because it's low sew until you kind of get to the end when you sandwich them like a quilt. And quilt it.
Wow, so cool. What an innovative process. I love it. And the end result is so pretty. What a neat process, Cheryl. So cool. So where can we go to try our hand at this? Because you've got some kits available so people can kind of give it a go and see how they like it.
Yeah, I sell them as kits or as patterns. So the kits include the batik fabric, the pattern, if you just want to use your own scraps. And I sell them in my Etsy shop. And the URL is www.etsy.com/shop/Cheryl Lynch Quilts.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much, Cheryl. We're going to all go check it out.
Thanks, Abby.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. And now back to my conversation with Patty.
There's always something you're going to find. A perfect technical book, I should
say.
Right,
right. And so this book was all about Ultra Suede?
Yeah. Okay. In order to market it, we took out a half-page ad in Vogue Pattern Magazine, and we didn't have the money to pay for it. And she said, "Well, I'll have the orders come to a post office box in San Jose." So she goes to the post office and walks in, and the post office box was empty. And she just about cried, and then there was a note from the postmaster, "Come to the desk here." So she went to the window and he said, "Here's your mail." He gave her a big sack.
Oh, wow.
Totally full of orders. And I think that those first orders paid for the ad and the printing. So we were pretty lucky because we really didn't have savings.
Right. But ultra suede was such a huge trend at that time, right? So
it was huge.
You met market demand. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was our start. And then we did Mother Pledge's Painless Sewing with Pretty Patty's Perfect Pattern Primer and Ample Annie's Awful But Adequate Artwork. That was our second book.
That's quite a name. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, that was successful. And then we came back to Portland and we did the tailoring book, the first tailoring book. And then I said, well, we need to redo the pant book. Let's do it together. And so about that time, we officially formed our, I think it was an S corporation to start with, of the two of us in Palmer Pletch Publishing. And that was sometime toward, well, probably 1976 or 77.
Okay. Right. And so it was a publishing company from the beginning. It was a company about making books.
Right. And to promote the company, she traveled first with Ultra Suede seminars. And then about a year later, I quit my full-time job and added pants seminars. And